Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening?
Science isn't about facts. It's about what we want you to believe.
Somebody kill me!
Radio, where, well, I guess I'm sad to say, it appears that personal liberty, personal responsibility, and personal accountability are starting to look like remnants of the Jurassic Age. That is to say, they're kind of looking to be extinct. But, meh. I am, as always, your host, the Chief, coming to you from the vicinity of Portland, Oregon. If you'd like to join the show, the number here is 949-272-9588. Now, we've been watching what's been going on lately with our president, not quite there. Doug, that was kind of what I was hoping for, something in the chat room. Now, President Biden doesn't seem to be doing too well, in my humble opinion. I talked a couple weeks ago about how I had watched his speech, and a few days ago he gave a press conference. I watched a little bit of it, kind of some snippets. Found the most interesting, of course, was he had notes with pictures to make sure he didn't call on the wrong reporter. Okay, this is who you have to call on. This is their name. This is what they look like. Don't call on the wrong person. And this is what they're going to ask. And this is how you're supposed to answer it. Yeah. Press conference. We know we're going to get the real story here, aren't we? Yeah, this is not going too well for the leftists, I think. But I kind of notice, I've seen some polls. Nobody seems to be too thrilled with what's been going on with our administration lately. On certain things, in fact, on most things, nobody seems to be happy. However, probably just the strongest response or approval about how he is handling the distribution of the COVID vaccine. Yeah, that's it. Not like he developed it, or he's trying to take credit, but yeah, he hasn't messed that up. That's about the only thing he hasn't messed up. I could talk about the border. I don't want to talk about the border. We know what's going on, much as they try to deny it. First thing Biden did was he got rid of what President Trump had put in place. And then he tries to say, well, I'm telling them not to go, and I'm taking out ads on Facebook and all this, telling you should stay there, and we'll let you know when you can come, and they're not buying it. He's sending the signals, and they're coming, and there is a crisis. nobody's happy about it. The let them all in, total open borders crowd aren't happy because he's not letting them all in. He's actually trying to maintain some semblance of order and immigration, but or at least the appearance of some, so they're not happy. And, of course, the normal people who care about the United States, they're not happy at all. So, yeah, gun control, nobody's happy. The leftists are, think he's not doing working fast enough. The normal people are worried about what he is doing. But what I have noticed is, you know, since it's been a couple months since he's been in office, it's getting a little ridiculous. It's getting harder for the people on the left to keep talking about Trump. So what are they talking about? Nothing. I have noted, they haven't said anything. They've just gotten really eerily quiet. They can't talk about all the wonderful things that Biden is doing. So what are they going to talk about? Nothing. You know, I often talk about a guy I refer to as blue check mark guy, the liberal journalist that I, you know, an old acquaintance of mine from high school. And sort of my window onto the leftist echo chamber. He's gotten really quiet, at least on politics. Now, of course, I never really much engaged with him on politics before or at all because he's a leftist, and you see, if you don't agree with him, then he just unfriends you and blocks you, and I would lose my window. So I just keep quiet. The last time I engaged with him on much of anything, it was quite a while ago because he had said something stupid because he's one of these typical leftists who thinks he knows everything about everything, including the things he knows nothing about. And he had seen a video of a cruise ship in Mexico which got blown into another cruise ship in Mexico, and he was wondering, he said it just didn't make sense because those ships are really big and they can't be blown around by the wind. And I'm thinking, this guy, you know, dude is a moron. So it's something I know about. So I explained everything to him about sail area and wind and draft and all the things that affect how a ship can be blown around. And I gave him my bona fides since it's something I know about, you know, my years in working in marine navigation and such. Okay, that's fine. But I was thinking about that because that brings up something that's been in the news a lot over the last week. This started a little over a week ago. There's a ship called the Ever Given, which was aground in the Suez Canal. Now, all this together, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. I'm not going to claim I know a whole lot about the Suez Canal because I've never been through there. I read the specs on that ship. It's huge. But it was stuck in the canal for almost a week. I think yesterday or so they actually got it free. Kind of dug it out. But I wanted to talk a little about that, and then I'm going to get into something. But the ship got stuck in the Suez Canal, and this thing is huge. I thought I knew a little something about huge ships, having spent a lot of time on board aircraft carriers. Wow. Aircraft carrier, I guess the biggest ship I was ever stationed on was the Constellation, which was about 1,000 feet long and about 80,000 tons displacement. The Ever Given, just to give it, the length was 1,312 feet long. Displacement, I said the gross displacement was 220,000 tons. And net weight displacement, 199, so it's about 200,000 tons. Yeah. A crazy Cajun says in chat room, it sounds like they have to dredge the canal deeper. No, that's not the issue. I'm going to talk about it. What is the issue here a little bit? But the size of this ship, once again, the beam, that's how wide it is 193 feet, which is actually a little smaller than an aircraft carrier. It's about 250 feet, but a lot of that is the overhang of the flight deck. The hull is much, but the draft of this ship is 47, or could be as deep as 52 feet. And the capacity of this ship is basically the number, we call it 20 equivalent units, something like that. It's like the size of a 20-foot long cargo container. How many 20-foot long cargo containers it could hold? 20,000. That's a lot of stuff, this thing. But, okay. Here's where I am. I've been babbling on too long. What happened on this ship was, well, I heard that it was speeding through the, it was actually going double the speed limit through the canal. Why was it doing this? Well, that happens a lot because the wind was blowing. And it is, it's hard, it's, the faster you're going, the easier it is to control a ship in the wind. If you're going too slow, you just get blown around. So they're probably going fast to avoid what actually happened, which is they sort of got blown into the side and went cattywampus, which is apparently what happened. And I was thinking about all this, and, you know, with all that's going on, I decided this reminded me of a sea story. Now, as I occasionally have mentioned before, the difference between a sea story and a fairy tale is a fairy tale starts out once upon a time, and a sea story starts out, oh, this is no shit. Doesn't mean it's not true. Okay, I got a real no shitter for you. Now, strangely enough, in my 21-plus years in the Navy, most of it, like, you know, 15 years of that was spent on sea duty. But some of my best sea stories, my favorite ones, came from when I was on shore duty. Now, if that doesn't make sense to you, I spent a lot of time underway on my shore duty, especially my first tour, because I was a craft master. If you don't know what a craft master is, that's an enlisted person who is in charge of a naval vessel that is not a commissioned ship, but is larger than a small boat. In my case, I drove harbor tugs and self-propelled fuel barges. And that's, you know, so I actually, the fuel barges used to go out to San Clemente Island, San Nicolas Island off the coast, up the coast to, I was stationed in Long Beach, California, used to go up as far as Port Hueneme, so got to move, go travel around a little. But the story I'm going to tell you today happened while I was on driving a tugboat, harbor tug, and I was actually pretty new at the job. I had I started out my tour there as an office job, which was kind of a dead-end job. I was a first-class petty officer hoping to make chief one day, and I was in the exact same job that a guy that I on my last ship had had before, and he never made chief, and I was not all that happy, but a chief who was in the office sort of took me under his wing and sent me out to the service craft division and to be trained as a craft master. They kind of rushed me in through that after a while because somebody was going on leave who was driving a tugboat, and so they needed somebody to drive it because he was getting married. He was going to be gone for a month. And so I got this, and then I went to my regular job that they originally had me pegged for after he got back, which was the to be the craft master of a fuel barge. But it was not self-propelled because the main engine did not work. So they used to move it around with a tug, and they were going to get it fixed, and then they found out it was a little worse than they thought, and it would not run by itself until it went through a major overhaul. And at that point, there was one of the older, smaller tugs, like the one I had been driving for a while, but a different one. We had two types of tugs, the older, smaller ones, and the bigger, newer ones. And the craft master of one of the older, smaller ones, or actually the craft master of one of the bigger ones, was a chief who was retiring. So the chief who was in charge of one of the smaller ones was going to take over for him, and they pulled me off of my job that did not require anybody to drive the boat and gave me his tug. Okay, so that's where I was. I was pretty new at driving a tugboat. I had a little experience, but not much. And one day, I was out there. We were going out to the weapons station, Seal Beach, doing something. I'm not sure what. But me and this other tug were both out doing something. And we were done with the job. We were heading back to Long Beach, or our regular port. And we got a call on the radio. The Coast Guard had seemed to have a problem. It was very windy. Let me describe the geography of where I am. Los Angeles, Long Beach Harbor. It is called San Pedro Bay. It is not a natural harbor, not a very good natural harbor. It was kind of built up, dug out, and then a breakwater went around the outer harbor, which would break up the waves usually, but didn't provide any protection against the wind. So this was a very windy day. Now, this night, what had happened was there was this vessel, about a 300-foot-long vessel called the SS Catalina. This used to be known as the Big White Steamer. It was built in 1924, and up until 1975, it was the main way you would get to Catalina Island, 26 miles off the coast. This thing wasn't very fast. How fast could it go? I got this pulled up. It could go 15 and a half knots. So, yeah, it would take upwards of 2 hours, you know, to get, you know, from to Catalina. So one way. So, yeah, after 1975, it kind of went away because they had hydrofoils. You get there a lot faster. So, none of what had happened, this thing had been sitting out, anchored or tied to a mooring buoy in the outer harbor for years. Well, this particular night, it broke loose. And it was drifting along. It was drifting across the harbor, causing problems. Somebody called the Coast Guard, and they sent somebody out to take care of it. Unfortunately, what they sent out what they had, which was an 82-foot cutter. I'm guessing about 100 tons, you know, not a tiny little boat, but not very big, and not designed to tow a 300 foot long, upwards of 1,000 tons vessel in heavy winds. But, you know, it was kind of thing you'd send out to tow in a cabin cruiser or something like that that broke down. But that's what they had. So they went and they took this thing in tow, and they were not doing too well. Our dispatcher called us and said, hey, they have a problem. Could you guys go out and see if you can help them? Because we had tugboats. We could do that sort of thing, maybe, we hoped. Very windy. So we go out there and we see this thing, and we're talking to the Coast Guard on the radio, and they're very happy to see us because they're in a way over their heads. So they want to take this thing out and tie it up to a little mooring buoy out there near the entrance to the Long Beach Harbor. So we're trying to get there. Basically, we, both of us, tie up on alongside on the each side of the ship to try and, you know, maneuver it around. Well, this was not working very well because nobody was in charge. Nobody knew what was doing. Now, both of the chiefs were there, the one who was leaving and the one who was taking over. They were both on board, and I suggested that one of them should go get a handheld radio, walk over onto the Catalina and act as a pilot and sort of direct traffic so we could know what to do. Well, nobody did that, so we're just kind of faking it. The Coast Guard is trying to do something, and we're sort of maneuvering this thing toward this mooring buoy, which is very close to the breakwater. Well, at this point, the wind is bearing down on the Coast Guard boat. The Coast Guard, the skipper of that boat realizes he's in a lot of trouble because he's about to get crushed between this ship and the breakwater. So I could see him out there with an axe or somebody on the stern of this cutter with an axe cutting their tow line. Yeah. So in the end, right now, since we're tied up, I actually have two of my crew are on board this boat right now as all this is going on, because they had to jump over there to handle the lines, to tie us up there. Still on there. And I can see that we're getting blown around. And I am on the side, and I'm thinking I am about to get crushed. My boat is going to get caught between the ship and the breakwater. So I just said, you know, I got to get out of here. I'm not going to wreck my boat over this. Coast Guard is already gone. The other tug is on the other side. I don't know what they're doing. I can't tell. They're not talking to me. I just said, cast off. I got to get out of here. Save my boat. I still have couple of my crew are still on the Catalina. Okay, but I get out of there, and now this ship, the Catalina, is being blown right across the entrance to the harbor. Now, why did I think about this? Because I was talking about how ships have to maneuver fast in the wind. Well, there was a tanker or something, a large ship was coming in at a very high rate of speed into the harbor because he needed the speed to keep so that he could control and not be controlled and not run into the breakwater. I guess he's going to slow down once he got inside the harbor and some shelter from the wind, you know, toward the inner harbor, whatever. This thing, the Catalina with two of my crew on board, is getting blown almost right into the path of this. Barely missed it. One of my guys told me later that he could have basically wrote his name on the side of that ship as it went by. That's how close it was. One of the scariest things I'd ever seen, situations I'd ever been in, except I didn't even quite realize it. I knew it was bad. I did not realize until I went back and picked up my guy after the ship had gone past. How scary it was. So, well, just to end the story, eventually another one of the Navy tugs came out with the actual harbor pilot on board, and they got it over to the Coast Guard base, and yeah, they all lived happily ever after, and the Catalina eventually made it to Ensenada Harbor, where it sunk and got broken up there, and that was the end of that. So, all that being said, I am just about out of time. Sea story, and since I had a little sea story, maybe I'll end with a little Eddie Walker Jr., old shipmate of mine, writer of songs. This is called Every Shade of Navy Blue.
Sailing out on the sea, make a sailor so lonely. Every shade of